Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, From Third World to First, is Lee Kuan Yew's political memoir about Singapore's rapid transformation from a vulnerable post-colonial city-state into a highly developed global economy. Written by the country's founding prime minister, the book combines personal recollection, historical reconstruction, and policy reflection to explain how Singapore survived independence in 1965 and then achieved extraordinary economic and administrative success. It is both a state-building narrative and a defense of Lee's governing philosophy, which emphasizes discipline, pragmatism, institutional order, and long-term planning over ideological purity. The book draws on Lee's notes, government papers, and official records, giving it unusual access to the internal workings of policymaking. At the same time, it is candid about the trade-offs involved in Singapore's development, especially the limits placed on political opposition, civil liberties, and Western-style liberal democracy. Readers approach it not only as a memoir, but also as a case study in leadership, governance, and development under severe geopolitical constraints. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how Singapore survived independence through pragmatic state building. A central theme of the book is the basic question of survival. Lee presents Singapore in 1965 as a small, resource-poor city-state with serious economic and political vulnerabilities after separation from Malaysia and the British withdrawal. The early chapters emphasize that nation building had to begin almost from zero, creating administrative capacity, restoring order, reducing corruption, and building the institutions that would make the state viable. This is not described as an abstract nation building exercise, but as a sequence of practical tasks under pressure, including infrastructure development, housing, and the creation of an effective civil service. Lee's argument is that idealism alone could not protect Singapore. Only hard choices, efficiency, and discipline could. The result is a memoir that treats state formation as a technical and strategic problem, not merely a patriotic story. That framing makes the book especially important for understanding how developmental states justify strong central authority in the name of collective survival. Secondly, economic development as a discipline-based development model. The book repeatedly links Singapore's rise to an economic model built on order, investment in infrastructure, merit-based administration, and a tightly managed social environment. Lee argues that prosperity required more than attracting capital. It required a state capable of enforcing standards, limiting disruption, and shaping incentives across society. He highlights public housing, transport systems, an efficient port, and the development of national institutions as parts of a broader strategy to make Singapore investable and dependable. The emphasis is not on spontaneous market growth alone, but on coordinated governance that could create conditions for business confidence and long-term planning. This makes the memoir useful as a study of developmental economics from the inside, especially because Lee does not separate economic policy from social policy. Education, labor discipline, and public order are all treated as economic variables. The book therefore offers a coherent vision of growth in which the state plays an active, sometimes intrusive role in organizing society for competitiveness. Thirdly, authoritarian governance and the moral trade-offs of prosperity. One of the most debated aspects of the book is Lee's unapologetic defense of a strict governing style. He presents censorship, legal pressure on opponents, and strong social regulation as necessary responses to Singapore's fragility, ethnic tensions, and strategic risks. Rather than framing these measures as regrettable exceptions, he often presents them as the price of stability and development. This gives the memoir a distinctive argumentative force. It is not only descriptive but justificatory. Readers are asked to confront a difficult question about whether economic success can validate curtailed political freedoms. The book does not resolve that question neutrally. Instead, it openly defends Lee's priorities and worldview. That makes it historically valuable and ethically contentious at the same time. It is especially relevant for readers interested in comparative politics because it illustrates how authoritarian modernization can be defended from within by its architects, not merely criticized from outside. The tension between prosperity and liberty is one of the book's defining subjects. Fourthly, race, social integration, and the management of a divided population. Lee places major emphasis on managing Singapore's racial diversity and preventing communal conflict. The book describes a society shaped by colonial division, wartime disruption, and post-independence insecurity, where ethnic harmony could not be assumed. His policy approach, including housing integration and restrictions on inflammatory politics, reflects the view that social stability had to be engineered rather than hoped for. This is one of the most important dimensions of the memoir, because it shows how Lee connected domestic peace to national survival. In his account, race relations were not a secondary social issue, but a core state-building challenge. The book suggests that economic development would have been impossible without a framework that reduced fear and rivalry among communities. At the same time, it reveals Lee's belief that social cohesion sometimes required limiting forms of expression that could inflame division. This makes the book valuable for understanding how governments may try to convert pluralism into managed coexistence, especially in societies emerging from colonial rule and vulnerable to unrest. Lastly, Singapore as a global strategic player in a larger Cold War and Asian context. Although Singapore is a small country, the book makes clear that Lee saw it as deeply connected to world politics. A significant part of the memoir discusses relations with major powers such as the United States, China, and Taiwan, showing Lee as a strategic observer and intermediary rather than a purely domestic administrator. This international dimension broadens the book beyond a national success story. Lee presents diplomacy as essential to Singapore's security and economic future, especially because the country had to preserve sovereignty in a region shaped by great power rivalry and shifting alliances. He also offers portraits of leading international figures, using them to explain how power operates at the highest level. The result is a memoir that combines national history with geopolitical analysis. For readers, this is one of the book's most distinctive features. It shows that Singapore's rise cannot be understood without its external balancing act. Lee's worldview treats diplomacy, deterrence, and strategic positioning as extensions of statecraft, not separate from domestic policy. In conclusion, this book is best suited to readers interested in political leadership, state formation, development economics, and modern Asian history. Policy professionals, students of comparative government, historians of Singapore, and general readers interested in how a small state can survive against unfavorable odds will find it especially useful. Its main value lies in how directly Lee Kuan Yew explains the logic behind Singapore's transformation, using a first-person account grounded in records and policy memory rather than distant interpretation. Compared with many political memoirs, it is unusually concrete about administration, institutions, and trade-offs. It also stands out because it does not hide its central controversy. The book defends a governing model that delivered prosperity while limiting liberal freedoms. That combination makes it more analytically valuable than a celebratory national history, and more revealing than a simple autobiography. Readers come away with a serious case study in how discipline, strategy, and centralized authority can build a modern state, along with a clear view of the costs such a model can impose. If you'd like to support Lee Kuan Yew, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.